Okay, now I'm recording. How are your blue lines? Are they looking good?
My blue lines always look good.
Your blue lines look fucking spectacular.
Thank you.
Do you want to do the intro? Do you want me to do the intro? Did you just get your nipples out?
Maybe.
That's very nice.
Thank you.
I wish I took a screenshot of that, and
I'm glad you didn't.
we could have put it on the Instagram. Struggling to speak without even reading a script. I don't think it's going to go well today.
No.
No.
You're allowed nipples on Instagram now.
Are you?
Yeah. As long as they're like artistic.
What's an artistic nipple?
I think one that's been drawn.
Oh, okay. Yours look like they're drawn on.
They are.
Oh.
Yeah.
You draw on little eyebrows on top of them.
glad my body's such a joke for you.
You started it.
Yeah, I did actually. Oh, that's fair enough. This should just be the intro.
I think it will be.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
We ready just for me to go whenever I want?
Whenever you want.
You just fart.
After no, I moved on the bed.
No, whatever.
I'm perched on the end of the bed.
What's the laptop on? You got a little table?
The washing basket.
Oh, that's nice, isn't
It's a
it?
proper pro setup in here. Dirty
There is
washing
it.
basket.
We are not amateur at all.
No.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the second part of the Anthill Kids episodes here on a Bloody Mess podcast. Joining me, as always, via Skype, it's the co-host of your favorite podcast. It's James.
Hello.
You all right, buddy?
Yeah, I am. I'm very good, thank you.
Good.
It's due to my stupidity, this is coming out late.
Well, your
But
stupidity, our lack of being able to get organized. It's not like we
yeah.
didn't have the script ready, we just didn't record
People
and
just
it kept forgetting.
Yeah. It's literally just one of those things.
So,
But
yeah.
you know.
Sorry, so yeah, we apologize. It's going to be about 2 weeks later than scheduled.
But if you listen to it by now, you've already realized that, so.
Yeah. So we are sorry. We are sorry.
Speak for yourself.
Well, so let's get to it. So we'll stop fanning about. Part two of the fucking Ant Hill Kids. So we should just quickly recap, because it's been 4 weeks, of where we've been.
Right, well, I've been to Budapest. That's the main reason that the podcast has been late. I had a fantastic time. It was good. It was my second holiday this year after Malta, which I also enjoyed. Went to Birmingham as well for a gig. That was very. I like Birmingham. It's an underrated city. What about?
There's been a murder of podcast. A bloody mess. So let's actually recap on what we discussed in the first episode. We looked at the man who would go on to become the leader of this cult, Roch Theriault. And we focused mainly on his upbringing, his beliefs, cheating on his wife, and eventually joining the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And we did that episode as a sort of precursor to this one, as it showed the steps that may have led Roach to become the cult leader, and how he gained his own followers within the Adventist Church. So if that's more your bag, go listen to that last episode. But if you're here to listen to us discuss the going-ons inside the cult, you're in the right place. So sit back, relax, drink your tea, walk your dog, or murder your spouse. Let's get going.
Sacre bleu!
Why did you suddenly speak fucking French?
Because it's French Canadian. That's
he is French Canadian.
Yeah.
Also, a spoiler alert: we're not going to finish the story this episode because I've done my usual. I've just written so much. I can't get away from that. I can't just look at Wikipedia and then condense it into one small thing. I like the detail. I like it.
Well, I like the details. Well, the best thing is to do you. What's your? Do you write from your source material, or do you do a series of notes?
I take bullet points then from what I. This is all mainly from Murderpedia, so I've taken bullet points of a big story and I've put it in my own words.
What I do is I find an article that seems interesting, copy that, paste it into like a scratch pad, basically like paste that into it. Then I find an article like something on Wikipedia, paste that into it. I find an article on new local news websites, paste that in, and then I try and work a timeline.
Oh no! This one was all done for me. He's written a huge, vast amount, and because I type as I read, I don't know the full story, so I'm just typing and learning as I go. If I knew the full story, I might be able to miss a few bits out. But still, come on. Yeah. It's more interesting. We've got more to talk about.
Exactly. No, that's fine by me.
So, we ended the last episode as Roach. He was, is it Roach? Roch? We'll call him Roch.
Roch.
Roch for this episode. So we left Roch. He was on an Adventist trip away, and he perched upon a rocky outcrop, where he had visions of God telling him that where he was a very holy place.
He was perched like a sacred sparrow on the rock of destiny.
That's exactly how it was written. By this time in his life, he had his own little group of followers who all lived together. And he also had a reputation as a healer within the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
You know who else was known to have a great reputation in the field of Seventh-day Adventist splinter groups?
Who?
David Koresh and the Branch Davidians of the Waco Siege.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not saying that fringe religious groups are dangerous, but they're not making a good argument in favour of straying from the mainstream.
No, it's not. That's two people we know and two bad things have happened.
Exactly. Two for two.
Two for two. 100%. So with his little group growing, Roche decided it was time to move from Thetford Mines and set up shop in a place called Saint-Marie. And it was here that Roche opened a healthy living clinic, basically selling food and shit like that. It was like an organic diet, healthy eating, and holistic literature that would be an alternative to medicine. Strange, eh? But what's stranger is that all the uniforms were ankle-length pullover tunics, green for the ladies and beige for the boys.
Green for girls, beige for boys, that makes sense.
Makes sense. And with the main man, Rush, wearing his own dark brown robe. Sort of sounding like, you know, a generic image of a cult already, isn't it?
Definitely. They're not doing themselves any favours. But have you noticed that by declaring their lifestyle as being better than other people, or at least healthier, this helps to distance themselves from outsiders, and it pushes that us versus them agenda, doesn't it?
Oh, must have done, yeah. So, if it's starting to sound like a cult, I'll ask you a few questions, right?
Okay.
Cults make money, right, yeah?
Yes.
Well, this venture was making money.
Good.
Also, cults recruit new followers, yeah?
Well, why, yes.
This venture gained new followers.
Good.
Also, cults have followers who give up everything to join them.
They do.
Well, during this time in the Healthy Living Clinic, people would come in and offer their time to help work, as well as give financial contributions to the clinic. This also included three new followers who sold their lives' possessions to join and move in with their families.
See, at first, when you hear about this, you think, oh, who's going to be daft enough to do that? But the more you read about the recruitment techniques, it just makes you realise how manipulative these groups are.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And we'll learn a little bit more about that later on. I hope. I don't know. This, alongside a couple of people rejoining the group, meant Roche's following was beginning to rise rapidly. Within the group itself, all the women, apart from one... Murderpedia mentions names. I don't, because I just get lost with people's names and we might forget by the second episode. So if there's someone really, really integral, I will start mentioning names.
Also, speaking of forgetting, this is the third. This is the second episode. The next one will be the third episode.
God, we ramble on a lot, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
So all the women, apart from one, were fighting for Rosh's attention. Sounds like my life.
What, fighting for the attention of a French-Canadian man?
Shut up. If you cast your mind back to the first episode, we'll remember that Roche was actually in a relationship with one of the followers, Giselle.
It's pronounced Jizzle.
Jizzle. Roche was in a relationship with one of the followers, Jizzle, who became very jealous of all the infighting for Roche's attention. She decided her only option would be to ask Roche to marry her. And the couple did marry on the 8th of January 1978 in Montreal. There was no honeymoon, just a 5-hour drive home. Sounds like a fucking great time was had by all.
Where was this wedding?
This was in Montreal.
I have an interesting fact about Montreal.
Ooh, first of the day.
Yes. The University of Montreal commissioned a study comparing perceptions of women between men who watched porn and men who had never seen porn. Now, the study was cancelled as they couldn't find anyone who hadn't seen porn.
That was my question at the end there. I was like, wait till he finishes. I'll ask him, where did he find a man that hasn't watched porn?
No, they couldn't find it. Yeah. Do you want another?
Yes, please.
Right. In 2012, a highly skilled criminal group managed to pull off Canada's biggest heist and stole $20 million worth of maple syrup. That's the most Canadian crime ever.
How many million dollars?
$20 million worth.
How much liters is that?
That's at least three bags.
Three bags. Yeah. It's a lot of maple syrup, $20 million worth.
Three bin bags.
No, it's more than that. More than that.
At least. Four.
Four and a half. Is that all your facts?
Yep, that's all.
All for today? Or are you going to surprise me later?
It'll surprise me too, I can't remember.
2 months later, in March of the same year, a man who was following Roach had a wife who was suffering from leukemia in Quebec. Apparently, the treatment was going very well in a hospital, but as this man was a follower of Roach, he allowed Roach to visit his wife in hospital, where he got into an argument with doctors and demanded she be discharged and admitted to the Healthy Living Clinic. With the new treatment of organic food and grape juice, want to guess what the outcome was for this poor lady?
No, I don't.
you can all guess. Roach had an excuse for this, saying that when he kissed the body, she awoke before falling back into death, but his quote was,
"You know, when God wants people, he takes them. It was Geraldine's time."
So, just an absolute fucking asshole.
Yeah.
I assume the followers bought into this, so there, this gives you a clearer indication of how much these people were in love with him and his ways of life. More worrying, this is the type of thing Roach could do and get away with.
It's also the fact that if any congregation member had doubts about their lifestyle, they wouldn't speak up about it, fear of ostracization or even being cast out. When you've given up your whole previous life and severed all your family ties, you can't risk that happening. So even if everyone is having a little bit of doubt, no one dares to mention it and everyone keeps in line. It's a truly brilliant way of controlling people.
I do have one question about what you just said.
Go on.
Is ostracization the fear of ostriches?
Yes, it's the big eggs that do it.
The giant ostrich eggs.
Yeah, and the long necks.
I've never tried ostrich.
No, neither have I. They sell it in Iceland, though. We could probably get it.
What, like Iceland the shop or Iceland the country?
No, Iceland the shop.
Okay, okay.
Do you want me to get it next time you come down?
Yes.
Okay, deal.
Or we can find an ostrich farm and kill one ourselves.
I don't think it's like pick your own strawberries. I don't think you can go out there with a hatchet.
Well, I'm going to do that with a Christmas tree. Again, that's nothing like an ostrich, is it?
Yeah, again, no, it's a bit different.
Right, Roach was eventually voted out of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, but this didn't bother him in the slightest. He had his own thing going on. He decided the best thing to do was arrange marriages for all his followers. Not all were happy, but they went along with it anyway.
See, again, that's just like the point I just raised. It's just total control over the people.
You'd think at some point someone would just stand up to him, and maybe they do. Ooh.
Oh.
What I need to point out about this is that he conducted the weddings himself, even though he was not qualified to do so, and his speeches were very rambly and talked a lot about women being there to serve the man. From my read, some family members were crying for their daughters and not crying out of happiness.
I mean, Roach can't have thought that this was a successful moment, can he? Like, everyone's crying on one side of the room and he's thinking, oh shit.
I don't think he really gave a fuck.
Yeah, true.
Speaking of marriages, though, Roach's wasn't going too well. Giselle. is it raining outside? Just a jizzle. Giselle threatened to leave Roach if he didn't stop this nonsense with his followers and help them find new homes. And she would move back. She threatened to move back in with her dad. What was his answer to this?
I think that he reasoned with her and set out a plan to rehome everyone.
No, he punched her in the face and locked her in a room for 2 days.
That's quite different.
This is the type of thing we're dealing with. And I know after I said that, what you're all thinking is, that's all, you know, sad, but how is the health clinic doing?
Well, if the last bit is anything to go by, I reckon it's going fucking disastrously.
Well, they had mounting debts, even though they were making money, assuming Roach was just keeping it all. They were under police watch since the death of the lady with leukemia, and since Roach had been kicked out of the church, their supply of books, food, had effectively been cut off.
I mean, that's actually pretty good for the authorities at the time, you know, the late 70s. They wouldn't have had a lot of experience dealing with this sort of thing, and I'm quite impressed at this.
They come and go. They've always had their eye on him, but he didn't do anything that was really breaking the law.
Yeah.
Well, he punched a woman and locked her in a room, but that was nothing to do with the health clinic at that point.
Yeah.
So what was Roch's solution to this inconvenience of the police and all that move? The group moved around for a while, setting up camp here, setting up camp there, until Roch told them that the world was going to end on February 17th, 1979, and the group would be God's chosen ones, but only if they settled in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. So that is exactly where they went.
Is it not Appalachian?
I don't know. Yeah, that probably sounds better.
I think it's pronounced Jizzle.
Jizzle. The foothills of the Jizzle Mountains.
Yeah.
So that's exactly where they went. It was only a 2-day trek to get where they wanted. To get to where they wanted to, you know, end up calling home. Lac Sec, it was called. The Dry Lake. I looked at Google Maps for this, and it is some fucking trek to get there. It's just utter madness.
I've got a question.
Yes, you do.
Technically, if it's a dry lake, does that not just make it a field?
I don't know, but that's what the translation was. Dry lake. All right.
Okay.
Could be a field. Maybe it was...
Because technically, the thing that makes it a lake is the fact that it's wet. It's not wet, it's not a lake, is it?
The dry lake. Maybe it was like just filled with dry water. Dry ice. It was filled with dry ice.
Ah, right. It's a spooky lake.
The group would spend weeks trekking back and forth, collecting goods, tools, etc. from the cars and the closest village to build their little community.
Now, if they're walking back to the cars to pick things up and then walk back, why don't they just drive the cars?
Because it was like through mountainous, treacherous, not rainforest, but, you know, there wasn't a fucking road where they were. They trekked across mountains. Does that answer your question?
Can I just take the cars one at a time? Single file?
No. This isn't an episode of the Grand Tour. There was no road, James. How could they get their cars across the dry lake if it was so wet?
To drive on top of the dry ice.
No, there was no road. They couldn't take their cars.
Okay.
And I think the...
Was there a gravel track?
I don't know. I wasn't there. I assume there was no way of getting the cars to where they want to live. This is why they trekked back and forth. Even children knew that. And that's why they're called the Ant Hill Kids. Because they're carrying stuff for so far.
Ah.
Yeah. It's not like he came up with that name. That's just what they're called.
Right, fair enough.
Because
I like that.
Yeah. Do you? You like making kids walk 2 days to collect goods?
Well, you know, we've all seen me. I could have only been made to walk more in my childhood.
They would work. The followers would work up to 17 hours a day, clearing land, digging a well, stuff like that. When they found the water level... Roch would declare it a miracle. Fucking right it was. He would ration the food, and if anyone would complain about anything, even about being hungry, he would restrict their rations even more. He would still use the same uniforms he'd given them during the time of the Living Health Clinic? I can't remember what it was called. But when the wearing the tunic became too much of a trip hazard, he would issue them with a sort of wraparound short. I think it's just basically a cloth in dark blue.
Now, was this rationing required? Did they actually have limited food and clothing, or was it a way of beating the morale and controlling them?
It was probably a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B.
Right, okay.
If you remember from the first episode, you will recall that Roch suffered from complications from a stomach ulcer operation from years ago. He would use this and also fake cancer to avoid helping out in the manual labour involved in creating the new home. He would instead insist to his followers that everyone outside the cult were actively against them.
Ah, that old chestnut.
That old chestnut, indeed. But it seemed to work, because he had all these followers. As you'd expect, though, this was all too much for some. One follower who we mentioned in the first episode, one of the followers he gained from the retreat at Lake Rossio, would leave the cult to rejoin civilization. This particular lady was French and used her passport expiring as a way of getting her out.
I think that might have been the lady that wrote the TripAdvisor review in the first episode.
What? Was that not a different episode we did the TripAdvisor review? Oh, no, you did Russo. You did one of the Lake Russo. Yeah, sewage. That was it. Sorry, yeah. I apologize. That's how long it's been since we recorded. I don't even know what we're talking about anymore.
It's been a year.
So how was Budapest?
Fine.
another who joined during the health clinic days, one who brought his family and sold all his possessions to join, departed the group with the little he had left in the world to rejoin civilization.
Now, that's a truly scary premise, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, starting again with absolutely nothing.
But that's maybe why some people don't leave, because they're too scared to. At least the little they have something. They have this little family where they get given rations.
Yeah, that's true.
What I find weird is... sorry, what were you saying?
No, I say it's scary. It's just gross. Ugh, don't like it.
What I find weird is, in my limited knowledge of the working of cult leaders, is that Roche did nothing to stop either party leaving. He just used it to enforce his visions of everyone not in the cult as being evil.
I like the way you say limited knowledge, even though we've researched and recorded 5 episodes on this very subject.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, seriously though, it's a clever way of enforcing control, as it makes the members fear being alienated by the group. They can leave whenever they want, but what are they leaving to? They've got nothing else. It's like self-policing. It's brilliant.
Brilliant, sadistic, you know.
Oh yeah, I don't mean brilliant as in good.
There's a thin line there.
Yeah.
The new home was completed in September 1978 after starting in July of the same year. The cabin they were housed in contained one single open room with a well in the middle and various smaller rooms for sleeping. This is where they would all stay until God would come and begin a 1,000-year reign on Earth, presumably after annihilating the rest of the human race. It was after this cabin was complete, Roche would change his name to Moise, or Moses if it's in English, as Moses was the leader of the Exodus, which is clearly what Roche thinks he's doing. They basically became a family, Roche being Papi and Jizzle being Mammy.
Mammy Jizzle.
Oh, God. They would all share their Canadian welfare checks, and that would come to a combined total of $1,400. And for our British followers, that is £820 a month in 1978. And I use the inflation calculator, so that would be roughly around £4,500 a month in British money.
I mean, that's almost as much as I made in my babe station days.
That's exactly... So let me tell you, if I was earning that a month, I wouldn't be doing this fucking podcast. By October, Jizzle. was 6 months pregnant. She voiced concerns to Roche that some of the women who had not been assigned a husband were lonely. After this, it had come out that Roche had been sleeping with one of the other women, and when Jizzle attempted to flee, he caught her and threw her. Really shouldn't be making jokes at this point.
Yeah, that's why I didn't.
When Jizzle attempted to flee... He caught her, threw her down, and squeezed her throat before convincing her to rejoin the group.
Now, the violence is really coming out of him now, isn't it?
Oh, it gets worse. Roche would go on to declare all marriages apart from his void, and would go on to marry all the women himself. All of them apart from two he would end up having sex with.
See, this is the point where all cults start to fall apart, isn't it?
Well, when he marries them all and tries to have sex with them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, I don't know if this is a good thing. Hear me out. Yeah, it sounds great having all these women and shagging around, etc., etc. But all my friends with wives complain and tell me never to get married. So is having so many wives a good thing?
Well, I don't know. I'd give it a go.
All you married people, get in touch. Let us know what you think.
Also, anybody who's currently in a polygamous relationship, also let us know.
Anyone in a cult, let us know. Moving forward, as we're now in... 1978, can anyone guess what major cult event happened on 18th November 1978?
Yes, it was the 62nd anniversary of the end of the Battle of the Somme.
It might well have been. Have you actually researched that?
Yeah, that is correct.
Have you got another guess?
No.
I know our devoted followers know. Then they are correct. It was the Jonestown Massacre. Roche himself claimed he saw this event coming, But true or not, this event had an implication on Roach's cult. Doomsday cults were now in the public eye. People were taking notice of them. So much so that some of the outside family members of the Ant Hill Kids were now actively trying to get their family out. And this would end up police trying to take Roach into custody, but lacking any real evidence of any wrongdoing. So they were unable to do anything. However, Roach would voluntarily go in and speak to the police, and even took a psychological evaluation. In his interview, Roach would tell the police that the group was a democracy, and also tell police that the group lived
in peace and without any promiscuity.
He did, however, neglect to mention anything about the abuse, rationing, or his 1,000 wives. I think the police outcome was, this guy's a bit weird, but he's not doing any real harm or any danger.
Have you noticed that as the podcast goes on, he's starting to sound more and more Mexican?
That's the only accent I can do.
No, mine. I'm doing the accent.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say. A warning, right? A warning to everyone listening. It gets a bit worse from here on out. So if you don't like it, you just need to stop listening now. So remember how this guy opened a health clinic, promoting healthy eating. He didn't drink, apart from being a bit of a dickhead cult leader. He really promoted a kind of natural, clean diet that came with being a Seventh-day Adventist member, etc., etc. Remember that?
Yes.
Well, that all stopped. And along with it came an absolute shitstorm. Here we go. The diet and not drinking went out the window. He started eating meat and a lot of junk food again. Sounds like my life. And if you think that's bad, to get his hands on some meat, milk and cheese, he would prostitute out one of his wives to the local shopkeeper.
That sounds like my life. No, it's not. It isn't. That was just a joke.
His drinking would lead him to start holding drunken sermons, known to be very rambly and very long. If anyone fell asleep, they would get hit in the head with a 4-inch thick club.
Oh, God.
Gets worse. Due to having rations in place, a punishment dished out to a lady who ate a pancake or two more than she should have was to punch her in the side, which resulted in 2 broken ribs. According to what I read, one of his favourite ways to punish was to make a person strip naked and stand out in the snow. Which leads me to bring up 2 points. What would he do if it wasn't snowing? And second point, this is like what the Nazis did.
If it wasn't snowing, they'd just end up with a lovely tan.
A full body tan.
Yeah, I mean, it's also reminiscent of the Japanese Unit 731 human experimentation during the research on warfare in frozen conditions. They were literally giving people frostbite on purpose in order to try and study the effects and to figure out different remedies and things like that. It's horrific.
But just even when we were at Auschwitz, they had the cabin where the Nazi general would stand, and he would do a roll call of all the concentration camp people, campers, and they would have to stand there for hours in the snow.
Right. It's maybe horrendous. Don't call them campers. Can we call them prisoners?
I couldn't think of a word. Prisoners.
Yeah. Campers suggests it's a bit more like centre parks.
Okay. Sorry.
And it's not.
To fight back against Roach Thierault would be a fight back against God himself. The people feared, adored, believed in him that much. So much so that when another member left the cult, without being stopped, it only served to reinforce their belief in Roach. He would claim that the leader was the devil. The mixture of punishment and negative comments and beliefs of the outsiders would lead to followers to almost worship Roach. They would write letters such as this.
Right. Now, this is a letter written by a French person. Do we require the accent?
I mean, do you know it's French? Someone's called Hogla.
Is that not Holger and you spelt it wrong?
Let's just go French.
Hello, papi. I am reading about what you said on the subject of nutrition. It is very true that I nibble a damnable fault which I will never again repeat. The thought of ingesting such a large quantity of food in so little time discourages me. Even if I work outside the entire day without eating, I ask that you forgive me. If it is stealing, I did not realize it. It is this fault which causes my plumpness. I have the same issue, actually. It causes my plumpness, too. I do not want to be fat and plump, savant. That is too ugly next to the man that you are. I do not know what to think about everything and the meaning of my actions. I only know that I will not repeat them. And I don't speak lightly. If I did, it'd sound like this. I wish to be a true servant to you, my master. Alert, vigorous, with a clear and lively spirit and well-balanced to serve you every moment of my life. I have a long way to go. Thank you, Papi. I love you. Hogla.
Hogla. Maybe that was Norwegian. I think maybe you should do a Norwegian accent.
Hello, Papi. I am writing.
And for some reason, his niceties of letting people leave the cult seemed to stop here. One lady started just talking about leaving the group, and Rog told her husband, sorry, her legal husband, to cut off one of her toes with an axe. The husband refused to do this, only to get taunts from Rosh.
What are you, a faggot, huh? Don't you have any balls? If you want to be a man, you have to learn how to teach a woman a lesson.
Whether it's a description, DNA, or physical evidence, a criminal will always leave behind some type of clues to their crime. On the Criminal Prints podcast, we discuss cases with an emphasis on these clues. We call them the Criminal Prints. I'm Jaren, co-host of the Criminal Prints podcast, and I hope you will check us out on Facebook, Twitter at Podcast Criminal, or listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. And remember, keep your record clean and your prints off the scene.
When the husband still refused, Roch took the axe and threatened to do it himself until the husband reluctantly cut off one of his wife's toes. The man would be, he'd go on to become the main enforcer of the cult.
Do you think that was because he was like super tough and hard, or do you just think it was because he did what he was told?
I think it was just because he did what he was told. He may eventually have started to like it, I don't know. By the time the 17th of February came around, 1979, the day Roch said the world was going to end, and the world hadn't ended, you'd be forgiven to think that the members would question his leadership, authenticity, and question their overall belief in the group that they'd been following and living in for however long. It did no such thing to sway anybody. He managed to talk his way around it by saying that when God spoke to him, time passes differently for mortals and God, so it's difficult to accurately predict the end.
That's amazing. That's such a good workaround for the main sticking point to cults. Like, basically, it's when the doomsday doesn't happen. Check the God clock.
Exactly. Time difference and all that.
Yeah.
I thought it was quite clever.
Yeah, definitely.
So that worked and the cult stayed together. Families, however, were continually trying to get members out of the cult, and the police were once again brought in, and Roch was again taken for psychological evaluation. This time, not so peacefully. A helicopter and 10 police officers were brought in to bring him in and arrest him for obstruction of justice, presumably because he'd sent away 2 police officers a month or so before.
Ah, that's clever.
After the examination, he was declared fit to stand trial for obstruction of justice and given a suspended sentence. In brackets here, I've got explained meaning of suspended sentence, but I've forgotten to research it. James, you know what a suspended sentence is?
It's basically you don't go to prison.
So is it like your suspended sentence is 1 year in prison and is suspended for a year? So if you do anything within that year, you go to prison.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
You'll have conditions of your parole. I think you'll then be paroled, and you'll have conditions of your parole.
Okay.
Which means that, like, say you're not allowed on the internet, and then they find you've got a smartphone, and that's you straight back in jail.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a judicial punishment which is not enforced unless a further crime is committed during that specific period. So yeah, that's a better way of putting what we said.
Yes.
After this, the media started to portray Roch as a gentle mountain man. This was also after a member who had left told the press the group was a democracy. So Roch was a gentle mountain man who'd been given a hard time by the public and police just because he lived out of society with his little group.
Sounds a bit like me.
So this almost backing from the press and is okay from the psychology department, but only served to reinforce his followers' belief in him. Because if the media portrayed him as nice and betrayed by society, and also medical professionals couldn't find anything wrong with him, then he must be an emissary for God, like he claimed to be. And how fucking wrong everyone was. Dun dun dun! And unfortunately, that's all we've got time for today. Sorry.
Quite a cliffhanger, that. That's good.
Yeah, I did good there with ending my research and probably going to sleep 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, you did.
That's all we've got time for today, because that's all we've really researched. But it's just getting, you know, it's just getting in the thick of it now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. No, this is good.
I have read more, and it does get a bit worse than this.
Really?
But this is how it started off, as quite peaceful, quite, and he's just getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And it's like the people are scared to leave.
Oh, it's going to be a good one.
Well, I hope so. I've not done it yet.
Oh.
But we've got 5 weeks now? Not from when people are listening, from when we're recording.
Three?
I don't know. This is going to come out on the 4th, I think?
Yeah, 2 weeks after that.
Yeah, so the 4th is 2.5 weeks away. One and a half.
It's not. It's the 24th, you mad bastard.
I get paid tomorrow, this is great. But yeah, this is actually becoming quite an interesting story. When I first started researching cults to look up and talk about, I came up with this and I couldn't find a lot of stuff on it. I was like, this will just be a quick fire episode. How wrong I was.
Well, I did that about my quick fire episode, didn't I?
Yeah, but you managed to condense a cult into one episode, didn't you?
Just about.
And you did too. I've got one cult and there's going to be 3 episodes. I can guarantee you, even if we have to record for 2 hours, it will be one more episode after this.
Yeah, fair enough. That's good. And then I think after that, that's pretty much the
podcast over. Yeah.
See you later. We're putting an end to this series on cults, and we're going to go back to serial killers. I've got one that I've been thinking of doing. It's not a serial killer. It's just a horrific tale of domestic abuse, really. I just think it needs mentioning. Because it's, you know, you remember something. I was driving home the other day, and it came to me, and I was like, oh God, why have I remembered that? And I had to look it up, and I think that could probably be an interesting shorter episode, because it's just awful. And it was in Britain, which is bad.
Okay. That sounds intriguing. So yeah. We're done with cults after the Ant Hill kids.
I think so, yeah. I think that, not saying we've done everything that we can do with cults, I'm not saying that there's nothing else to talk about, but I fancy a change. I think that the listeners, you know, for all we know, the listeners could be dying for a case about the killings, yeah. and then just hoping for it to end, so.
Yeah, and we're just doing stupid French accents.
Who's we?
You're doing stupid French accents.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's not to say we won't revisit cults in the future.
Yeah, it'll probably be won't be a long series. It'll just be like short episodes and a couple of interesting ones.
Yeah.
We do have a few, like, big notorious figures to cover coming up.
Yeah.
That's why we're trying, I think the plan is to rattle out a decent series, 4, 5, 6 shorter episodes, and then it'll give us literally 8 weeks to really get stuck into someone.
Stuck right into them.
Yeah. And also, like, if we could, it's going to be a true multi-part birth, life, crimes, you know, bit. And it's going to be in real time.
If you have any suggestions of who you want us to cover, give us a shout. Not saying we're going to listen to you. We just want people to talk to us.
Yeah, exactly. You know, comment on things. And, you know, as always, we're loving the influx of people commenting and sharing the Facebook posts. We're loving people getting involved on the Facebook group, the listeners group.
We've had some new members, 2 or 3. Hello to you two.
Hello. Welcome aboard. Thanks for joining and getting involved. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
And it's made me kind of proud that we've just created like a little community. Even if the podcast goes down the toilet, we've made this little community, and it's nice.
This podcast will never go down the toilet.
True.
Because they're all saved on my laptop, and I'm never putting my laptop down the toilet.
Well, yeah.
I nearly deleted them all the other day, and then I was like, oh, no. Because we might switch from Podbean to, what was the other one? What's it called? Stitcher, was it?
Oh, God, I don't know. I don't get involved in the technical side of things.
I can't remember, but it seemed to be a smart move. I've not done it yet, but good chat. What are you having for tea?
I'm actually making a vegetable curry.
Oh yeah, what vegetables are you putting in it?
Chicken, onions.
I cooked dinner for a vegetarian last night. And I was like, I'm going to wire this guy with a mushroom and spinach risotto.
Yeah.
And so I put Parmesan cheese in it, and apparently that's not vegetarian.
Well, was he vegetarian or vegan?
He was vegetarian, but Parmesan, to make Parmesan, it involves the killing of animals. Not just taking their cheese.
Which ones get killed?
I don't know, but they need something from an animal to bind the cheese together. And that's just, I think it's just specifically Parmesan and Pecorino, is that?
Oh, yeah.
So you get specifically vegetarian Parmesan. I didn't know that. He was polite enough to eat it, because it's not like I slammed a bleeding steak on his plate. He was polite.
Did he make himself sick afterwards?
Yeah, he's now bulimic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but my
anything else you did to force anyone to contradict their own beliefs recently?
No, not yet.
Handing out sausage rolls at the mosque, anything like that?
No. No, it was bad. I felt really bad. But who knew? Well, he knew, obviously, but I didn't.
Yeah, it's like one of them things that when you start thinking about eating no animal products, you start to realise how much you actually eat.
Yeah. I was quite shocked that that is it's not vegetarian friendly.
I'm going to Google it, see why. Is it to do with like renin or casein or whatever it's called?
I don't know.
It's like an enzyme.
It begins with a C.
Is it casein? Parmesan, which takes its name from the three places it's made. Parma, Reggio Emiliana and Bologna, is not vegetarian because its production involves the killing of animals. The coagulation process necessary to make milk usually requires an enzyme called chymosin, which comes from something called rennet. Oh, rennet, yeah, it's an enzyme in a cow's stomach.
Yeah, so there you go.
And you can't just squeeze it out because the cow likes to keep all of it.
Yeah.
Selfish.
And I fucking force-fed that to a vegetarian.
Good one.
So just imagine what I'll do to you fucking vegans.
Foie gras.
I again read about foie gras, right? I'm not saying it's good or not condoning it in any way, shape or form, but people are like, the things are choking or whatever, but apparently these geese, it's geese, isn't it?
Yeah.
They don't have a gag reflex, so it's just like drinking to them.
But it's...
Not
but
drinking, it's like eating. I'm not saying it's okay, it's still disgusting.
No, but it's the fact that it's they're force fed.
Yeah.
They're force fed till the liver gets enlarged.
And so tasty.
Yeah. Yeah. They're only force fed until they stop being delicious.
I didn't like I've had it, it wasn't very nice. I don't really like pate or whatever the fuck it is anyway.
I presume it's just like a super rich, greasy pate.
I don't know. I've only had like two pates in my life, and that was one of them. I had foie gras as a starter and I had veal as my main, so it was just a lot of suffering in that meal.
And then for dessert, your pinata was just a child on a string that you hit with a rolling pin.
Yeah, that was a while ago in Milan. That was very nice. It was a good meal. Good meal.
I've had veal a couple of times. First time I had it, I didn't know what it was. It was part of a set meal at a restaurant that when I was travelling. And it was fine. It wasn't particularly nice.
Oh, well, I just
didn't think it was a very good cut. It was a veal escallop in breadcrumbs. And it was all right, but I didn't think it was a particularly nice piece of meat. Second time I had it, I did actually really like it, and I shouldn't have done because it's a cow kept in a cupboard, basically, and it's not right.
I think on the continent where I was, they're treated a lot better than they are here, the baby cows.
Really?
I think in Britain we treat them quite badly. I think, I don't know, people are going to tell me I'm disgusting.
But the thing with veal is, in order for it to keep like that, the animal isn't allowed to move around, and it's kept in the dark.
Really?
Yes.
Oh god.
Because that's horrendous. Why it's a very that's why it's beef, but it looks like pork or chicken because it's a very light meat because
I just thought it was because it was movement. A young cow.
No, they restrict the movement.
I feel terrible now. Force feeding vegetarians meat products. Killing baby cows. I didn't technically kill it. It was delicious. It was like a cheek or something. It was really slow cooked and it was so tender. It was delicious. But on a side note, I would like to stop eating as much meat.
To be honest, a lot of people that I work with are doing a vegan challenge, like just to see if it helps them, and it's whatever, it works for them, they're liking it. It's a bit of a challenge, something to do. Fair play to them. But I think we should probably, as a nation, eat less meat. You don't need to have meat every mealtime.
No, not at all.
But sadly, I am massively guilty of, if I don't have meat, I'm like, well, that's not going to fill me.
I get like that. Like, I had the risotto last night, and afterwards I just really wanted the McDonald's.
Yeah. Or, like, I'll get halfway through making something like pasta, and I'm like, well, I've got to put some pancetta in this, or, like, some chicken or something, just to, like, fill me, or get the protein in there.
But there's some good vegetarian, vegan restaurants, recipes out there we could use. But this isn't a vegan or vegetarian podcast.
True.
If you like
it's
food,
a meat eaters podcast.
If you like food, I've got a food Instagram page, not another fucking food page, it's called. With my 60 followers.
And he's still not put up any of the pictures that I went through my phone and sent in.
Sorry. I've still not read those books you sent me 2 years ago.
Oh, you bastard.
Yeah. It's the kind of guy
what books were they?
Okay. What's that
film? One was World War Z.
Yes. And the other one was... I think it's called Dice Man, is that right?
Oh, the Dice Man, yeah, that's really good.
I've heard good things.
You need to read that. World War Z isn't like the film.
Was it not?
It's a compilation of... When they bought the rights to the film, all they were buying was basically the legacy to make people go and see it.
By the way, sorry, if anyone's still listening, you guys can just go away now. We're just probably going to ramble for another 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's time for the conversation.
I haven't spoken to him in a couple of weeks, so...
Yeah. No, World War Z was basically the book. It's an oral history of the zombie war. So it's essentially interviews, diary entries,
and
court transcripts.
Because I didn't like the film, so I was like, why is he sending me the fucking book?
Nah, the film's gash. The book's written in different... Each chapter feels different because some of the chapters are transcribed, so like a script.
Yep.
Some of the chapters are diary entries by doctors and nurses. Some of them are interviews with military personnel.
Okay.
And they also, because theoretically it starts in India or Pakistan, around that area, and it spreads, and it's, the first bits are all written differently to the later ones where they're speaking to Western people. It's just really good.
So I was wondering, from the film, it's got the most obvious product placement in anything ever when he drinks the can of Pepsi in the hospital or wherever he is. Remember that bit? I was wondering how they would put that into book form, or how they got that from the book. Did he drink a can of Pepsi in the book? I don't know.
It actually comes with a free can of Pepsi.
Oh, yeah.
No, the book is the film. All the film and the book share is a name. If not even even some of the ideas aren't real. One of the bits, you know, when they all pile up on each other to get over walls. That's in it, but that's mainly just from desperation and scrambling. Okay. There's lots of good ideas in the book, like the fact that because the zombies aren't technically alive, they just go underwater and they'll just walk along the seabed and they'll come up on a beach somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
So there's instances of 5, 6, 7 zombies coming out of the water on a beach.
So,
because they've just been walking.
Speaking of stories, right?
Yeah.
One of my friends has written a short story and he's sent it to me to review.
Oh.
So, I'm going to do that. I don't even know.
What's it about?
I don't know. I've not read it yet. So.
Is it serious or is it a horror or what?
I don't know. I've not read it yet. I've read the first few lines and.
Is it scary?
No. But this guy, he's been going through a hard time at the moment and he went offline. This is the story. This is actually the guy. So he went offline and no one had heard from him for a few days. And the first few lines are very sad. I was like, mate, is this your suicide note you sent me?
Fuck yeah.
But he listens to the podcast, so if you're listening, keep on...
That's good.
Keep on trucking.
Yeah, unless that truck's,
going into
got
a
an
ditch,
exhaust pipe coming into the window.
Don't do that. You know who you are.
So I'm going to send it to me and I'll read it as well.
Send it to you, because I don't know...
If he wants, we'll share it on the podcast page and try and get some exposure for him.
Oh God, there's talk of blood and oh my word. Right, I better turn that off before I read it on the podcast. So everyone, thanks for listening.
Thank you,
Sorry for the rambling on again.
No, it's good. It's you're the real heroes, you who listen to the end.
Heroes.
So thank you.
Social media. Find us, on twitter.com/mess_podcast, I think. Facebook, if you just search A Bloody Mess Podcast, you'll find us. We've got a listeners group where people just share memes, stories, stuff like that, which is A Bloody Mess Listeners Group, I think.
Yep, that's it.
And Instagram, where, we did do most of our work there, but James has put a lot of work into the other social medias, so Instagram is just A Bloody Mess Podcast. Go follow us, speak to us.
Yeah, definitely. And if you need to find me in particular, I'll be in the bushes outside your house.
Exactly. Wanking on the wall.
Pretty much.
See you later, motherfuckers.
Bye.
You've been listening to another great podcast from the Fair City Podcast Network, a group dedicated to connecting and developing podcasts. Check out fcpod.net for more great podcasts and content.